Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex. With me is James.
Hello.
Oh, hey. So before we get started today, I just want to implore you to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We have other audio podcasts up, and we've also got video podcasts as well. Our latest was on Inception. So if you don't get enough Nolan from us in this podcast, then you can go to our website and check that out and get some in video form. Last week we had podcasts on Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. We've got more podcasts coming up, like one on The Gray, video podcast on Drive, and we also write pop culture criticism and post it on there. You can also find us on Twitter at The MacGuffin Men, and MacGuffin spelled MacGuffin. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, which you should do, you can review us, and please do so, because it'll help other people find us. So tell your friends, tell your parents, tell people you randomly meet in the street that we exist, and we'd really appreciate it. James, should we just start the episode here?
I think so.
All right, let's do it.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Bane.
Reckoning.
And now, here are Alex and James.
So, welcome back from the theme song. What are we talking about here today, James?
A movie that we've been waiting to talk about for a very long time.
Absolutely, we have. Which is?
The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, okay. All right.
Do you remember how I made fun of you for having multiple dreams about seeing this movie before it came out?
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, I should point out, is a totally logical thing to make fun of me for. I recognize how ludicrous it is, but continue.
I think I out-nerded you. I had a dream about reviewing this movie after I saw it.
So. That's so much worse.
I know. I woke up. I was like, that is so sad.
Oh my god, because that's being more excited about your own opinions for this movie than the actual movie.
I'm well aware. Yeah. I briefly considered not telling you, but you kept telling me about your repeated dreams after I made fun of you a lot, so yeah. I thought it was only fair.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you did this on the podcast as well.
Yeah. So, for excerpts from my dream last night, here's my review of The Dark Knight. How'd you like it? We haven't talked at all.
Nope, we haven't talked at all. I really, 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 really enjoy the process of watching it. Okay. And this podcast will make it sound like I don't love this movie. And I thoroughly, thoroughly love this movie, but only while I'm watching it.
Like, okay.
It falls apart so hard, like 3 minutes after leaving the theater, I find.
How many times? You see it three times?
Yeah, I've seen it three times.
In IMAX?
I saw it once in IMAX, yeah.
How was IMAX?
Pretty stellar. I highly recommend you check it out in IMAX if you can. I think there are only like 5 legitimate IMAX theaters in Canada, though, so good luck.
Yeah, but it's like an hour of IMAX footage?
72 minutes. And it's totally worth it. Like, they planned it out a lot better. Like, with The Dark Knight... if you remember the structure of that movie, the boat scene is intercut with the Joker and Batman's finale, and all the Joker and Batman stuff was shot in IMAX, whereas the boat stuff, since it was like an interior dialogue scene, which is impractical to shoot in IMAX, that wasn't shot in IMAX, so that was totally distracting because you'd get changes in the aspect ratio. It would go from using the full IMAX screen, which is a very like vertically tall screen, but not as wide as the typical widescreen frame. There would be switchback, and that was really awkward, but whatever. There's less of that in this. There's only one thing that they kind of screw up a little bit, but otherwise it's really, really well planned. Like, even reaction shots to some action sequences that are happening in totally different places. Like, the first Batman chase scene, when we get a cut to Commissioner Gordon in the hospital, that quick cutaway to Gordon in the hospital shot in IMAX for, like, no other reason than just this. So that was good. And then it mixed in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the quality of IMAX is amazing.
So. Yes, I know. You're a fan.
Yeah.
Did a lot of stuff still surprise you? Were you, we always know you're a fan of trailers that don't say too much and not giving away things in the marketing? Was there still enough new stuff for you, or did you see a lot of it coming?
Yeah, I was surprised enough. I wouldn't say I was as surprised as The Dark Knight, if only because, like, I think going into The Dark Knight, I expected Harvey Dent to turn to Two-Face in, like, the last 5 minutes, and that'd be set up for the next movie, which was totally wrong. Whereas this, there was less that surprised me. Like, I was correct about the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character, and, yeah, the general structure of the movie, I was pretty bang on about. But I didn't think Batman's back would actually get broken. That was cool.
Yeah. I guess a lot of people kind of saw that one coming, but
yes,
at least knew that was an option.
It just seemed impractical. Like, I didn't. The thing that surprised me about this movie was how large it was. It was much bigger than I expected it to be, like with the nuke and the fact that there was enough time that passed that a vertebrae could heal over the course of the movie. Like, yeah, the scale was much bigger than I expected.
You didn't expect it to be big?
I expected it to be big. I didn't expect it to be this big.
Yeah, just the scope, like how long it covers and...
Yeah, it's a huge movie.
Yeah. Okay, well, I was going to go over some of the characters, but you mentioned...
how do you like the movie? We didn't get your...
I didn't love it, and I've only seen it once, and just because it was so highly anticipated, I think I was watching it very critically. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what movie could have been played that I would have been very happy about just because of all the buildup and expectations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see it again and kind of be able to enjoy it as, you know, a standalone movie a little bit more, because I was very, analytical about every little choice being made and stuff like that. And that's my fault, not the movie's fault.
Yeah, that's why I see everything twice, so that I can just watch it once and then analyze it a second time.
Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't...
That's not me chirping you for not seeing it two times. That's just me saying that is specifically the reason why I watch every movie we talk about twice.
Yeah, I wasn't nuts about Bane, which is, you know, a big problem if you're going to like a movie.
Yeah.
Like, kind of such a central part of it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about him?
I thought he was fine. I didn't think there was anything particularly great about him, but I enjoyed him as a villain in a comic book movie.
Yeah. Does it fit with the tone of the Christopher Nolan Batman?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, particularly, like, they go to great lengths to sort of paint him and Batman as similar guys in their training and their scarred bodies and all these things. So it was very much supposed to be a Batman sort of meeting his maker type of thing. And his maker is very much like him, you know. They did the same thing with the Joker, but it was more psychological thing with the Joker. So,
yeah, it's, I don't know. I felt this movie kind of repeated the first two movies and some other Nolan stuff a little too much, maybe.
Okay.
Like, I like the idea of, you know, having this one, you know, world and references back to the first two movies and stuff like that. But some of it just came off as a little redundant, maybe.
Okay, like what?
Yeah, I mean, the villain kind of supposed to be, like, just like Batman once again. I think they did it much better with the Joker.
Okay.
You know, blocking off all of Arkham so no one can get out again. I think we've been there a few times already with this franchise.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all the Arkham City prisoners one time, and this time it's all the ones from, what is it, Blackgate Penitentiary or something like that?
Yeah. Arkham Asylum. You said Arkham City, but just...
Oh, yeah, Arkham Asylum in the ones we've seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stuff like that. I thought it was a little kind of treading on territory I've already been down before.
Okay.
Yeah. For escaping. League of Shadows, Ra's al Ghul, Scarecrow.
Yeah. Oh, did you not like the Scarecrow's appearance in this movie?
No, and that's what I mean. I do like the idea that, you know, it's still this one universe and, you know, it's still within the same narrative. I don't know. I didn't mind what he did while he was around. It kind of made me happy, but just seeing him again, already thinking that we're kind of, you know, retracing our steps, kind of bugged me a bit.
Yeah. I loved that the Scarecrow was around, and I loved his part in it.
Yeah.
I thought it was super funny.
Yeah.
And his giant desk was so great. Like, that was just, like, such a wonderful piece of design.
That was so silly.
Yeah.
Bane's voice didn't bug you at all?
Oh, no, it's ludicrous. It's insane. But,
okay.
Like, the... I mean, it's... A big fault of it is that, you, as an actor, just, like, you're so hamstrung by not being able to use, close to a third of your face, you know? Like...
I think it's even more than almost a third.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, no, just the amount of, area that an actor would typically rely on, that's just gone. And, it's so difficult, and it's harder to always harder to hear somebody when you can't see their mouth, just in general, in life, in movies, whatever. And, that also doesn't help. Also, you know, whatever they did to his voice doesn't help. The fact that he sounds drastically different throughout the movie doesn't help. But
oh, does he? I don't know if I noticed that.
It's weird. Like his, I don't know, just the intonation on his voice sometimes just changes. And I don't know. It's weird. Like, we're crashing this plane. Like, the way he says that is totally different from whatever else. So.
Did you ever play the Diablo video games?
No.
Okay.
Who do you think like... I am, a nerd who would, like, dream about Batman movies?
He sounds like Deckard Cain from the Diablo video game, for okay. anybody who has played that.
Travis, I saw this with Travis the first time, and after the movie, remember the character Daggert, I believe his name is? Travis, pardon?
Looking dagger.
Yeah. Travis pointed out to me that at times he sounds like Kermit the Frog, which is an exactly correct assessment by Travis. When I rewatched it, I was looking for that, and he's entirely correct.
Yeah, see, I don't know. The mask kind of covering up his face. I mean, I don't think there's another way to do Bane. I understand that the character Bane has a mask. Like, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, I think it just made him less expressive. And yeah, he kind of just already seemed more one-dimensional and, I don't know, simple more so than the Joker already, and kind of not even be able to use his face, I think, really didn't help or, you know, reflected that really well for me.
Yeah, and you are also, like, just in that sentence that you just said, you're also mentioning the biggest problem with Bane is that he's just not the Joker. And I think Bane is, like, a totally serviceable villain. The only reason we expect a good villain in this movie is because we had the greatest villain in the last movie. Whereas the villains in Batman Begins are totally serviceable, and Bane is better than them. It's just sort of like the engaging performance, and just in general, that you can just do the craziest, most unexpected things with the Joker that you just can't really do with a character that's supposed to be logical, like have sort of this really crazy end game, but is still a logical character. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I definitely understand that. And even before going into this movie, I knew that what he would have to do would always, you know, do something which is better than Heath Ledger's Joker, which I think was a very difficult, if not impossible, task.
Yeah.
Certainly. But I don't know. He
certainly.
No, he just kind of seemed a little like a pro wrestler, like a bad pro wrestler villain. Like, he seemed very, like, I don't know, like a Power Rangers villain almost. There are some parts when he's laughing and using that very kind of, it's like, comedically theatrical voice that it really, really took me out of it.
Okay. Two things I loved about Bane. The way, like, he would hold on to his coat or his vest. I love that so much.
Like an 1860s railroad tycoon.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was so great. And when they're in the stock exchange and sort of, like, just... he's like used that access card, and now the guy's working on the computer or whatever, and then he get like just walks away a little bit, and he's just sort of walking, and then he does like a little nod to somebody off screen. I just think that's so funny, and it's so like Will Ferrell in Old School when he does like the hey Mike, I just think that's so great. And in general, I enjoyed the way Bane carried himself. I thought just the way he moved and stuff like that, I thought was good. I think I had the voice been better, and had they been able to do it without covering his face, I feel like would have been a lot better.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I mean. Like, that's just such a part of Bane, is the mask.
Yeah.
In the comic books, you know, since you never see mouths moving because they're still images, it's not as problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it works. I mean, as much as people don't like Batman and Robin, I think when he is, you know, part of an ensemble of villains and he's just kind of a brute, that's not as much of a problem. But when his role is as big as it was in this movie, it really does become more of a problem.
Okay.
Speaking of funny little parts, I'd say overall this movie is not nearly as funny as the other Batman movies.
Really? I think I think when it is funny, it's funnier than the other Batman movies.
Really?
Yeah. So that's what that feels like line is so funny.
Yeah. That's the one I was just going to bring up. That kills. Like, that is so, so funny to me.
and when Lucius says, well, let me show you something else anyway, or just let me show you something anyways. You know, like, that's funny.
Yeah.
I think, like, the jokes in this movie are funnier than the jokes in other Batman movies, but I don't think there are as many of them. You know?
Okay.
Particularly Batman Begins. I feel like there were more jokes in Batman Begins than The Dark Knight.
Yeah. Well, I just felt like this movie was so long and had very few jokes, and even for as heavy as The Dark Knight and Batman Begins was, I think this one is maybe a little too heavy. Okay. I guess for the finale, you kind of got to go dark. But I feel that, and I know there'd have to be some swapping of certain plot elements, but I'd really prefer this to be the second Batman movie and to end on The Dark Knight.
Yeah, fair enough.
And kind of build to Joker being, you know, the whole, you know, meet your maker thing. Save that for the third one. Obviously, as I said, you can't just swap the two because it doesn't make narrative sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, switch Bane for the Joker and a lot of the set pieces and narrative points. And I think it makes for a better trilogy.
Okay.
Yep. How'd you like Catwoman?
I liked her. Yeah. I thought Anne Hathaway specifically was really great as Catwoman. I thought she did her job exceptionally well.
Yes.
So there are things I hate about Catwoman.
Like what?
How she just attaches herself to, like, makes out with Batman real quick at the end.
Yep.
Makes no sense and totally undermines the fact that she is a good character for the rest of the movie. Yep. And like Nolan's first not terrible female character in like 8 years. And then she just only changes her mind because of what a guy told her to do or whatever. I don't know. I didn't love that, but I liked her up until then a lot.
Yeah, no, I thought she was good. And when I heard that Catwoman was going to be in it, I was really not very excited.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big Catwoman fan, but I thought this was done well.
Yeah.
Even if you never hear the name Catwoman.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought they did Catwoman as well as possible. The only thing I would take away is the makeout at the end.
Yeah, or make a bit more sense of it.
Yeah, because I mean, you can clearly see that she's sort of coming around to Batman's idea, and that's just sort of like a way over the top way of showing it. I feel like the way the movie ends with her in the cafe, like that would have even made more sense to me of her just being there with him without them having to kiss first, you know?
Yeah. Cause then it's, you know, she's got her clean slate thing or whatever, and they're just, you know, away from Gotham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Commissioner Gordon.
Loved him. Commissioner Gordon. Yeah.
Yeah. As always.
Yeah. Very simple character that is done for like exceptionally well. So.
Yep. And, I mean, he kind of gets sidelined a little bit and, John Blake fills in for him. Like a lot of the stuff that he would be that John Blake does is what Commissioner Gordon would have been doing in the last two movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's just such a hothead, you can't stop him.
No more hotheads, James. We talked about this before. Not having any more hothead mentions.
You're a cop. Stop trying to solve crimes, you hothead.
What? Go back to those places you were not solving crimes and not searching the tunnels.
Go back to recognizing other orphans with that orphan power you have. That was one of my favorite John Blake moments.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's just like, oh, I know you're Batman, obviously. Like, just no lead in
at like, all. Of all the citizens of Gotham over the years who haven't figured this out.
Magic orphan power. It's like the blue flower of fear from Batman Begins. But makes even less sense.
So I hope he does become Robin and fight crime in Gotham using his superpower of recognizing orphans.
The next supervillain that comes along, I see it in his eye. He's an orphan. We can narrow down so many potential suspect possibilities.
The lamest superpower ever. What did you think of the whole Robin John Blake thing?
I loved it.
Really?
I wish they didn't call him Robin. You cut that line, it's so much more effective.
And it's a very clumsy reveal, I find, too. Like, that's such a weird thing to say to someone. I don't know.
Well, the thing... I mean, so many of the things, you know, dialogue in these movies is just a weird thing to say to somebody in any context. Yeah. But it's just like a... It comes too late in the movie. And also, I think it's sort of like a... Like, you can... That's in the last 2 minutes of the movie, or three or four, you know? And you can't be cutesy when you're building to your big ending. You can be cutesy earlier, but then it's just sort of like, it's you got to be all business at that point. Otherwise, it kind of takes me out. And the whole thing with Nolan's endings, they're these great big builds, and it's just supposed to be like, the title card is just the release. And that just... That hurts the movie. And I also think, like, I feel like it would be more interesting... Because, I mean, I think the implication is that he's going to become Batman, not that he's going to be a Robin, you know? It's just sort of like the Batman cowl will continue on, because he's going to the Batcave where there is another Bat outfit. Yeah. And I think, like, because I remember my sister sent me a text message after she saw it, and she's like, oh, JGL's Robin? And I'm like, yeah, but he's Batman, you know? Like, I think Nolan wants us to think he becomes Batman, not he becomes Robin. And I think naming him Robin is just too much.
And not Robin on his own.
Yeah. 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 Like, just don't mention Robin. Let's just not do that.
Yeah. No, and you cut that line, keep everything else, show him going to the Batcave. I think everyone would be able to put it together just the same without the Robin confusion.
Yeah, and I mean that the Bat, like, there's no reason for the Bat symbol to get fixed before Bruce leaves Gotham other than, you know, he's leading John Blake to be Batman, not Robin.
Yeah. How did you feel about, I know what you mean. The ending of The Dark Knight, that one, as we said in our Dark Knight podcast, that just builds and builds and builds. And that's how you end a movie, Nolan style. Like,
yeah, yeah. And I think the last few minutes of The Dark Knight Rises still really works. Like, when it ends, I'm still, like, a little, you know, kind of shaken a little bit. The build works. It doesn't work as well as it has in the other two movies, but... and I think a big part of that is that... Although the last shot of this movie, I just love. With JGL on the riser and, like, the camera going in and just cut to black. Love that shot. Anyway, but yeah, no, I think a big part... Well, what's your favorite scene in this movie?
That's tough. I really don't know.
Okay.
I only saw it once.
You're still allowed to have a favorite scene, even if you've seen a movie one time.
No, I know. I'm just... I don't know. I probably can't recall it as well as you can.
Okay, that's fair. Well, my favorite scene upon first seeing this movie, and it still is... now is the scene where Bruce Wayne climbs out of the prison. That is like the most effective scene in this movie, I think. And it's the scene that after three viewings still gives me like shivers. Just the way that scene builds, it's so perfect. And hold on, I think that's Old Man. Okay, he's not here yet. The way that scene builds is just so perfect. And it's got all of the Nolan-y things, like the way the music builds, the bats coming out. And it's really sort of like the callback to the very beginning of Batman Begins. I love that. Not even just because we have so many jokes about the Why Do We Fall line, but also just because I enjoy the sort of tie-in to the very beginning of the trilogy where he sort of falls down that hole. And now he's getting himself out of it. And I love it. And it's so triumphant. And it sort of ties into what I think is the thing I didn't love about this movie, or the reason I was more attached to the other movies than I am to this one immediately, is that this movie isn't as much about anything personal. Like it's about like bigger things than just four people, which is what The Dark Knight was about, or Batman Begins, which is about one, debatably two people. And, I think that's why like the ending of both of those movies hits me much harder, is just because Batman's so triumphant, or kind of triumphant, the end of Batman Begins, like, he stopped this crime, but there's more coming, but fuck you, crime, I'm Batman now. And then, you know, like, cut it, you're just like, yes! And then The Dark Knight, it's sort of like, well, it was all that action, and now we're getting this relief through this little monologue, and then, but it's also awesome that Batman's just sort of going to take these murders. Like, that's this really cool, like, kind of weirdly heroic thing to do, and just, like, you feel so bad for him, but it's sort of, like, building him up as sort of, like, this hero that's too good to be a hero or to actually be seen as a hero. And then boom, cut to black, The Dark Knight. And it's awesome. And then The Dark Knight Rises, it's more about the symbol than it ever is about the person. And I know that's what they were going for. And I think that's adequately, they get that across well. I just think, like, for me personally, that's why this movie doesn't hit me as hard as it does. And that's why the him rising out of the prison scene is my favorite, because that is the one where it's Bruce, who is the person I'm the most attached to in this trilogy, overcoming something, you know, specifically by himself, and it ties everything together. And I just think it's this great scene.
Yeah, no, and it comes full circle, and Batman Begins is a very, you know, personal one, especially that part of it.
Yeah.
So, did you like how they cut in from Batman Begins, or is that a little too spoon-feedy for you?
I didn't like any of the cutbacks. Just because that is just something that always looks cheesy. And there's just no way around it. But, you know, whatever. If that's what you gotta do, that's what you gotta do.
What about Ra's al Ghul's ghost appearance?
I hated it the first time. I'm more okay with it now. Okay. Because I don't think it's necessarily a ghost in as much as it's a dream. Right. And that all of the dialogue he says is basically things we've like heard him say before in Batman Begins, that they just sort of twist dialogue. And I think that's cool. It's just sort of stuff that's still bouncing around in Bruce's head. He doesn't say anything new. It's just sort of things that, you know, would conceivably be in his subconscious or whatever.
Right. You saw the opening scene in that as a trailer before, right? The prologue?
No, I didn't. I avoid those things. Yeah.
Okay. How'd you like it?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I didn't love it like some people seem to be going nuts for it. Like, I didn't think it was like greatest action sequence ever or anything, but, I thought it was really cool and, super cool in IMAX. What about you?
I liked it. I just really didn't like, I don't even know his name. Tom and Carcetti.
Yeah. Oh, well, we all know how I feel about Carcetti.
See, I like Carcetti, though.
Actually, no.
I liked him in The Wire. But yeah, in this one, he looked like Miami Vice villain. And I didn't like how he looked or talked or anything.
Yeah.
And everything else about that scene I thought was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But that I was just him, which was the part I thought I would like, I did not like at all.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know. Something about his hair and his tucked in shirt.
Well, he's a goof.
I know he's a CIA guy, but still, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then we get kind of the Skyhook ending again, being dragged into the plane while it's flying, like Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Which is another thing I thought we'd seen before, but I mean, it's an airplane scene.
That scene's cooler than Skyhook to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's just like that they hook onto the plane and then, you know, like rip the wings off. That's awesome. Yeah.
Oh yeah. When it's completely, vertical and like everything's ripping off it and they're just hanging there.
And that they're like, those guys are standing on the wings shooting through the plane. I think that's really cool. Cause you just don't see guns fired in planes in movies just because, you know, you can't, unless the plane's going to crash immediately.
There's massive holes in it already.
Yeah. And, exactly. And it's like, they're hooked onto the wings. So, you know, let's shoot it up. Yeah.
Yep, why not?
Yeah.
How you've expressed your displeasure with the action in the other Batmans, or at least especially in Batman Begins. How did this one work for you?
I think the action is good in this movie. I think the thing that's great about the fight sequences, one, there's so much punching in this movie and I love it.
Just, now there is.
Because Batman doesn't do a lot of punching in the other movies and that's all I want. I want Batman to punch the bad guys in the face. I think Nolan's really learned that he's just not an engaging action director. So yeah. He's just going to shoot in the wide shot and, he's got coverage for everything and we can actually like see Bane and Batman fighting. Like we can see the punches being thrown. And I love that. The first fight that they have is great. There's so much wide stuff. I love Christian Bale in that scene, the way he's just like screaming and so obviously so tired and just like beat up. I think his performance in that scene, like physically, is just amazing. And also that fight scene is good. It was a good decision to have no music. I mean, you know how I feel about not having music in a fight scene or in, you know, action scenes in general, but, it makes more sense for a small action scene like that, to take away the music in order to give it sort of the feel of like a bigger scene with more gravitas to it, I suppose. And I also really like how in this movie particularly we see Batman reuse a lot of moves that we've seen him use, which isn't something that noticeably happens with a lot of action movies or sequels, because the directors and stuff always feel like the character should change it up, whereas it makes so much more sense that Batman would use the same strikes against Bane that he would use against anybody else. And I mean, you know, not with the exception of going for the face mask, but you know, like we see his like double punch that we see in The Dark Knight and his headbutt. And I think that's really cool. And that was something that stood out to me as something I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, if it works, it's been working for him for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two movies. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't as happy with the Bane fights. I didn't mind that they were, I don't think that I minded that they were shot kind of further back and wider. But maybe that's what it was. But I didn't think that their fights were that engaging. I thought I agree that Christian Bale was entertaining doing them, but I just didn't think the fights were that good. Maybe not choreographed as well.
That's fair. No, they're just, they're big slugfests. And I mean,
but I knew that's kind of what we were going to get. And that's one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons they chose Bane is to have a physical presence for a good fight against Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets into it a little bit with the Joker, but it's always, usually when there's a bunch of people helping the Joker or something, because he's just such a little, you know, wiry villain that it's not much for hand-to-hand combat, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I don't know, another thing that I think would have been cool if Bane was the villain in the second one, because, you know, now that Batman's established and he's going to start coming up against kind of the worst of the worst as far as physical specimens, and you know, he's got the training that Ra's al Ghul had, but he's just massive, so
yeah,
I don't know, I thought that would have been good.
Okay.
Yep. he's such a terrorist though, eh, Bane?
Oh yeah.
Like not just a normal villain, but very much the terrorist angle again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get any political vibes from this one, like we kind of discussed in the last?
No, I haven't been reading any reviews. Have people been getting political vibes from this film?
Well, kind of the...
No, I'm not fucking with you. It's like so yes. Yes. Oh, times okay. 1,000.
There's... I don't know. You always say that you're less interested in that kind of stuff than I am, so...
I am less interested, but it's hard to not notice, particularly when Bane and them go nomad from the Wall Street or the stock exchange scene, and they're on motorcycles as the representative of 99% with people in suits on their backs, you know, like literally on, riding on the backs of the 99%. You know what I mean? They go all out with that stuff.
What angle though? Because I've seen a couple different ones. A lot of people say it's very very pro-Occupy Wall Street, and I've seen a lot of people say that it's very clearly anti-Occupy Wall Street.
I think it's like it kind of wimps out. Like that's something about this movie that I think is not good as well. It wimps out in that I don't know. Like, I don't know because they're so vague with both sides. I think it's definitely not pro Occupy Wall Street, but it's not anti Occupy Wall Street. It's just sort of like, because it's very, this movie really, really values the power of the collective. And the idea of coming together with a goal. Like, I mean, Batman lights up that bat symbol, not for himself, but for everybody else, you know?
Yeah. And very 99%.
Yeah. And which is why, you know, he hands Gordon the or, you know, tells Gordon to do it himself as opposed to just, you know, Batman doing it, which would have been a much easier way. But he's sort of like, well, I got to save Gordon anyways. I might as well spend the time, run some gasoline down this bridge. But yeah, no, and I mean, obviously, Bruce Wayne is sort of supposed to be emblematic of the 1%. Yeah, I think this movie, I come away from it being like, it values groups and that things are might be terrible now, but together we can collectively come out of it, but we can't go this dark with it. You know, like destroying a city is not the way to go. And I don't think anything, I don't think it's super anti-Occupy Wall Street at all.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's more pro-Occupy Wall Street than anti, I think.
Yeah, and even as you said, I mean, the message isn't that clear, but just from some of the stuff they deal with, like if you're going to put, you know, he goes into the stock exchange. I mean, just that alone, it's just such a big signifier of, you know, this theme.
Yeah, and I mean, sorry.
Way to look at it.
Yeah, and this movie, like, I mean, the final draft of this script existed before any Occupy Wall Street movement actually started, I think. Because, like, they were shooting at the beginning of last summer, you know? And I think my understanding of it is that late summer or whatever is when Occupy Wall Street really like physically starts.
You know? Yeah. And I remember them saying that they were kind of, I don't know how true this was, but they were considering shooting with some of the Occupy Wall Street movements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think like, I mean, and this movie's clearly written as like a reaction to, you know, bank crisis or whatever. When was that? 2010? Is that when that happened? I don't know. And I mean, clearly we're all still feeling, or we're still feeling the repercussions of that. And it's just sort of like the idea is that people have been pushed so hard that, that this is what it's come to in the Dark Knight Rises. And I mean, even like a more human character, like, Selina Kyle, she's robbing people and stuff like that. Although we never really get an idea of how long she's been doing it, but it seems like she came up on hard times and then started doing this.
Yeah. And we know she has a criminal record and all that stuff and she's kind of forced into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, Batman, just to go with the kind of some of the ways you can read it one way or the other, Batman couldn't be Batman if he wasn't so rich, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what makes him so powerful. We know he doesn't have superpowers. He just has a lot of money and a desire to do things, but it's really the being a billionaire that allows him to save all the people that he saves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear Rush Limbaugh's theory on this?
No, but I'm sure it's great.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just about how this is so pro Occupy Wall Street and so anti-capitalist. And he points out that Mitt Romney used to run a company called Bain Capital and that's the reason why Bane was selected as a villain, I think, is his logic there.
Yeah, great. Genius.
Classic Limbaugh.
Yeah. God. Like, does he think movies are produced a week before they come out in theaters? Like, what is this?
We don't even get a lot of Batman in this movie until the kind of the ball really gets rolling near the end of the movie and doesn't stop.
Nope. But this movie, I feel like this whole series, I feel like you never get a whole lot of Batman. And it's very much like, and I mean, there's about 20 minute section of this movie where we just don't see Bruce Wayne or Batman at all on screen when he's in the prison and he's just, you know, dealing with that whole broken vertebrae and Bane is doing his football stadium thing. And all of that time passing. And, I think there's probably like, if we count up his screen time, I think it's similar to the Dark Knight as far as how much Batman we've got. I mean, this movie's 10 minutes longer, but, or maybe 20 minutes longer.
I feel like there's probably the most of it in the Dark Knight though, as compared to, Begins in this one.
Okay. I won't disagree. I mean, I feel like there's a good amount of Batman in this movie. I feel like my complaint about this movie is certainly not there wasn't enough Batman.
Right. All right.
I mean, you might be correct, but I don't see that as a detriment to the film.
Right. Okay. I was reading some reviews for this movie, as I tend to do after I see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a critic for Salon named Stephanie Zacharek. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but I doubt she listens, so I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. talking about Christopher Nolan. And this is actually a quote about Inception, but I saw someone else reference it and say it's true of this movie and kind of Nolan's career. The quote is, "If the career of Christopher Nolan is any indication, we've entered an era in which movies can no longer be great. They can only be awesome, which isn't nearly the same thing." Do you think that's true? Do you think that kind of fits? Like, do you see that coming from Nolan's career and that being kind of a change that he's ushered in? Or do you find that doesn't ring true at all?
Not at all.
I think it's an interesting quote. And I think just the distinction between, you know, awesome and great is, you know, worth examining. But I think that's kind of the opposite of kind of what most people think, is that it kind of brings this greatness and this, the epic scale and the grandiosity of at least the Batman trilogy, and that it's not just awesome. You know, it is really getting into those personal and timeless themes more so than other blockbusters maybe would have.
Yeah. And maybe she's just sort of like, kind of subconsciously hearing what I feel like the chants kind of sound like is, "This is awesome, awesome, this is awesome, awesome," throughout the movie, and like the people chanting in the prison, because that's exactly how it's feeling. I was like, "This is awesome, awesome," you know what I mean? but I think that is incorrect. I feel like this is a movie that is awesome, that tries to be great, and absolutely succeeds at the first half of that statement. And kind of fails at the second. I feel like some of the things it tries to get across work, and some don't, and some of the decisions made just don't work. But I feel like Inception, with all its flaws, and that movie's an extensively flawed movie, I feel like that is a great movie. And I feel the same way about Dark Knight, possibly even more so. And I think, yeah, I do not agree with that statement. I feel like, in the next few months, particularly for this movie, and definitely for Nolan's next movie, we're going to be dealing with like a bit of a Nolan backlash, I think. Because I feel like this is a movie, like, just when I look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores, it seems to be doing pretty well. And it is a movie... Pardon?
What is it, like 89 something?
That I haven't looked since. Like, I looked before it was released just to see, you know, if it's getting positive reviews, basically.
I
think, like, because this is a movie that the more people think about it, the worse it becomes. And it's really awesome the first time you watch it, until you think about it, and it's sort of like, I still haven't figured out why they don't just blow up the bomb. Like, immediately, once Marion Cotillard is revealed to be Talia al Ghul, then, and she's had the trigger the whole time, there's just no reason for them to not have detonated it 3 months ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess that it was before they had kind of cut off the remote thing, so she still could, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, they cut off the remote
thing. Talia al Ghul.
Yeah.
I thought she was Talia Shire.
No, nope. Which would have been an odd choice for them. but anyway, I feel like this is a movie, and I mean, The Dark Knight had some sort of, like, you know, backlash in the online community itself after it got so praised, and this movie just simply isn't as good as The Dark Knight, and I feel like people are going to, because all the people that have been raving and applauding at the end of this movie when they see it for the first time, which has happened each time I've seen it, everybody's applauded, I feel like those people in 6 months are sort of going to get a piece of the backlash, like people talking about, oh, it wasn't that great, it wasn't as good as The Dark Knight, or, you know, if you watch this movie again, you're going to see the problems it has. And I feel like Christopher Nolan's next movie has to be, like, amazing. It needs to be, like, the best movie he's ever made. Otherwise, it's going to get, like, I don't know, I feel like the
I know what you mean. And I think we kind of got that with a bit of, like, some people's review of Inception,
I absolutely felt.
Was very much just like, oh, if this movie hadn't been made by Christopher Nolan, I think maybe they wouldn't have loved it, but they would have, I think they would have given it a much different review.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, yeah, as you said, especially now that Batman's done, I think people are going to say whatever he does next. Oh, he was just, you know, it's because he had the Batman franchise. How do you not make a good movie with the Batman franchise? I don't know. Ask Joel Schumacher, but it's possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just for how big he's been and how much critical and popular love, I think any misstep or perceived misstep in his next movie, yeah, you're right. I think it's really going to get pounced on and cut up.
Yeah, and Inception was his first movie as superstar auteur Christopher Nolan, right? So,
yeah, and first one, you know, not dealing with source material.
Yeah.
Like, everything else since Memento?
Yeah, Memento.
Well,
and I mean, Memento is based on a short story written by his brother, but still.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, then which one? I thought there was one.
Well, Insomnia is based on another film. Batman Begins is based on, I think, a collection of comics.
The Prestige is a book.
Yeah. Then it's Dark Knight and Inception. Yeah, Inception was his first original idea.
Yeah, which I always think is funny for someone. I mean, they say he's such a creative, original person. And I'm not saying he's not, but I find that interesting that he has been just adapting. And I know none of the Batman movies were just a direct adaptation of a single comic book or a single storyline. And it's, you know, that still takes creativity. But I find it interesting he has been working off other people's work for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, did you have a point? Did I cut off?
No, it's just sort of like that his next movie is going to be like overly scrutinized. Kind of like the Inception parallel you drew there, I think is good. I feel like it's going to be more scrutinized than Inception, given that it's now. Given that this is the worst of the Batman movies, I think. It's the most ambitious, but its ambition is sort of where it falls apart. Like it goes a little too far. And... Yeah. I feel like,
I really thought you'd hate the whole pit prison thing.
I love it. I think it's great.
I know you do. That's what I'm saying. I was really surprised.
No, I think it's great. I just feel like we're going to get the Inception backlash, but a little bit more. Yeah. And not that, you know, not that Christopher Nolan should be immune to criticism. Because, I mean, we've been criticizing his movie quite a bit today. I just think, like, I don't know. He'll never be an accurately judged filmmaker. You know, like The Dark Knight was the last thing he'll ever make that won't get unjustly hated, even, you know, immediately. You know, because there's just going to be like the over critiquing of fanboys or the under critiquing of, you know, the regular popular audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll critique this movie and say something bad about it.
Please do.
Most anticlimactic death in the Batman series.
Bane? Yeah. I like that part though, because I was like 50-50 if Batman was gonna die right there. I think that's why that scene works for me.
Oh, okay.
I understand the complaints about it being anticlimactic, but
okay. And do you like the I think that a lot of people were kind of, just because of the tone that this trilogy had been running on, were expecting a darker ending.
Mm-hmm.
Were you okay with this one? Because, I mean, it is a pretty positive ending. I mean, we have a new Batman pretty much. I guess depending on who you ask, Bruce Wayne survives. Selina Kyle. Alfred seems happy with his... Oh, what is the drink that he says he's going to order?
I don't know. But he orders two different drinks. Like, the first time it's a larger glass, and the second time it's... smaller.
But when he's telling the story of his fantasy to Bruce Wayne, oh my god, I forget what drink he says, but just how he says it really made me laugh. I remember that.
Okay. Yeah, the way Michael Caine says a lot of things is always kind of funny. But
yeah. But you're okay with the tone it left on?
Yeah, I like it. Because like they sort of feel like they need to give Bruce a release. Because, I mean, all these filmmakers that deal with... a character that you feel like in this world it would make sense for them to die, and this is exactly how I felt about the Bourne Ultimatum, the ending. It's just sort of that these filmmakers that deal with this character for this many years are just emotionally attached to them and aren't gonna, you know, root for them to die in any way, and rooting is basically writing, you know, like, so yeah. It's just sort of like he doesn't want to kill Bruce Wayne, you know. I thought it was, I certainly thought it was within the realm of possibility. And for, you know, the 2 minutes that the movie lets you think he's dead, I did think he was dead. But I do like that he comes back and pulls off the rare return. I like it. And I think it's a good triumphant note for him.
Yeah. All right. How do you think it fits into the trilogy? That's probably the worst.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, being worse than Batman Begins and The Dark Knight isn't a bad thing necessarily.
Right.
This is on its own merits as a blockbuster, an extraordinary blockbuster, but not a great movie, which I think Dark Knight certainly is, and I think Batman Begins debatably is.
Okay. Well, we talked about it on our little mini-sode about how this might be one of the best American movie trilogies once it's all said and done. You think it's up there?
Certainly. I still think the Bourne movies as a trilogy are better, just because I feel like none of the movies in the Dark Knight trilogy are as good as the Bourne Ultimatum is. I kind of feel that way, and I feel sort of dirty saying it, but I do feel that just as a film, The Bourne Ultimatum is better than any of these Batman movies. I think I'm more attached to Batman than I ever was to Jason Bourne, but just on a filmmaking level, I think Bourne movies are better, and I think that's the only competition. You know, like, I feel like as a trilogy, I think the Batman movies are better than the first Star Wars trilogy. Not better than the second Star Wars trilogy. I mean, The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, how do you top that? I don't dislike The Godfather 3 as much as most people, but I also don't like The Godfather 1 and 2 as much as most people. And what's the other competition? Lord of the Rings. We both don't like that movie. Those movies, sorry. I say that movie because they all feel like one long 12-hour movie that sucks. what other competition is there?
No, I think you're right. I think those would be the ones that people would say are the competition. So. Mm-hmm.
And pardon?
Back to the Future.
Nobody likes Back to the Future 3. Sure. Yeah.
I guess it's not a trilogy anymore.
Yeah. It's almost a quintrilogy. I don't know. Like, what am I supposed to say now? What's the fifth movie comes out? What is it?
Quintrilogy.
Okay.
Quintology.
Okay. What was I going to say? I had a point until we got into...
Was it about Die Hard?
No. It wasn't about...
Was it about how much this movie's like Die Hard with a Vengeance?
No.
Because it is.
Yeah. I was thinking about... Because, I mean, Spider-Man 3 came out in 2007, right? Came out in May 2007. And The Bourne Ultimatum comes out in August 2007. And The Bourne Ultimatum was sort of like the first really great third movie in a trilogy that I liked. And it was the first sort of trilogy of the sort that every movie gets progressively better, or at least more interesting. And I'm just wondering, like, because, I mean, The Dark Knight Rises, we're saying a lot of negative things. We're focusing on the negative because so many people will tell you what the positive is. But The Dark Knight Rises, when all is said and done, will be looked at as a good film. And this will be seen as a good trilogy, good to great trilogy, and like in general by the general populace. And I'm just wondering, like, are we just now at a point where trilogies are just going to be good? Like, have we learned enough now that we know how to make a trilogy that doesn't end terribly?
I don't know.
Because, like, what's up next? I mean, Iron Man 2 was pretty bad and roundly disliked, but I guess that's the next trilogy to end. I'm curious to know how these things work from this point forward. If trilogies are just, if we know how to make a good trilogy now.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, no, I would love it if trilogies were all suddenly good. You know, the curse of the third movie no longer existed. You know, that would be wonderful. But I just thought, like, maybe the terrible end to a bad trilogy is, or to a trilogy, got to its apex with Spider-Man 3, and now we're just at a point where it's like the studios are like, okay, we can't give them Spider-Man 3 anymore. Let's just make it good. You know? That's sort of my main thing about trilogies now. I'm very curious about it.
Let's not make Spider-Man 3 rolling.
Okay, so just make sure you can say any dialogue as long as it's not dialogue present in Spider-Man 3.
Nobody do some weird emo flip jazz scene in the middle of this movie, and we should be okay.
And if someone asks you how the pie is, you are not allowed to say it's so good. You are allowed to say it is the most delicious pie you've ever had, but not so good.
So where do we go from here with Batman?
I don't know, but I want like a legit reboot. I don't want the Spider-Man, like, let's add some new things, but mostly just do old things. Yeah. I want, like, I don't care what it is, as long as it's different.
And do you have no interest in kind of a bit of a standalone, not origin story Batman movie? Like, we're not getting Christopher Nolan and Christian Bale back. Fact, that's not an option. But maybe just kind of a Batman story that's not an origin story, that's not directly with this one.
So it's like it's a new franchise, but we get no origin.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
Okay,
I think that might even be kind of interesting. But yeah, no, I feel like obviously there will be some sort of origin because if you're changing the world so much that it's a new franchise. And this Batman just totally doesn't fit in with the Nolan franchise, then I feel like they have to do some sort of setup. It can't just suddenly be like Batman's fighting Killer Croc or whatever, you know?
Yeah. But even, I mean, I guess this movie kind of was Dark Knight Returns a little bit.
Yeah, the basic idea of it, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't do something like that. And I guess, well, we can have our Joseph Gordon-Levitt Batman movie, can't we?
I would be interested to see that for sure.
Yeah, I think that would be a good way to, you know, do what I explained. You kind of got the origin in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to do a whole origin story setup. I guess the concern is that they probably want to get an origin out before Justice League, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know how that'll work. Travis would know better about that, but I don't know how they're going to integrate it.
Okay.
Yeah. We were talking a bit in email about the music and or Hans Zimmer. How do you feel about the music in this movie?
I feel like it fit the tone of the movie in that it was very heavy and bombastic and without a lot of kind of I don't know, this kind of sounds snobby, but kind of some of the subtleties of his other music.
Okay.
Pounding timpanis, and I thought it was a very, you know, just a lot of the things I was describing about Bane, kind of more simple, more like evil, like just uncomplicated and bombastic and out there, kind of that wrestling persona made into music.
Yeah, I agree. And I think sort of like tying into what I said about this movie being more about big, not just, you know, in the scale of the actual movie, but it's sort of its idea that it's more about of a collective than it is about Bruce, as far as the other movies have been. It's just sort of like the music does never let up. And I mean, James Newton Howard didn't work on the score like he has on the other two. And I know he's responsible for the Harvey Dent theme, which is this sort of like really, you know, the more minimalist aspects of the score. And I have always sort of felt that he's probably responsible for like the Rachel Dawes theme and, you know, that little piano theme that we do get in this movie. And I feel like that's sort of like in line with how I feel about the movie, is that James Newton Howard's absence sort of sums up, you know, the feel of the movie, that it's just so big that there just aren't enough small moments in it for his presence to be worthy. So I agree with that. And just as like Hans Zimmer's career as a whole, because Matt Wiles, a listener of ours, asked me this.
We love you, Matt.
Yeah. He's clearly the modern John Williams, right? Like, there's just no other competition for these big movies that are scored. Hans Zimmer is the composer whose name some people know, as opposed to every other composer whose name nobody knows.
I feel like that's a fair comparison.
Yeah. And it's just sort of like, he's done, at this point, he's probably done the same amount of blockbusters as John Williams, if not more. And, like, does he have any iconic music?
No, I really don't think so. I think, yeah, you're right. People do know his name and I think really like his music. But yeah, I mean, compared to John Williams' very famous, iconic scores that he's done for, you know, Star Wars and Superman and
Indiana
so many
Jones. Others.
And what?
Indiana Jones is the other big one.
Oh, yeah.
And Jaws. That's
Yeah, I mean, it's... I like Hans Zimmer's music, but it's tough to find anything that is going to stick around. I mean, it's tough to know until we've actually seen time pass how, you know, history is going to treat that music. But nothing is as distinct and iconic as, you know, those four we just listed.
Yeah, I think the two...
Exception, maybe?
But yeah, no, I think that... Yeah. The two options I feel like people would say is like Inception, definitely, which the most notable, like the piece of music that people tend to remember from that movie isn't in the movie. It's from the trailer, which wasn't even composed by Hans Zimmer. And it's just sort of like it's similar enough to the music that actually is in Inception that people just sort of thought it was the same. Yeah. But yeah, the music in the trailer is by like Zach Hemsley or something like that. It's a song called Mind Heist, but... And that's the blah that most people remember. But I think the other thing people might remember is the Captain Jack Sparrow theme, which Hans Zimmer didn't even write. He didn't score the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Okay. He did 2 and 3. And I feel like it just sort of gets remembered as a Hans Zimmer theme. And yeah, I just feel like maybe he's a composer that I think fits more into the movie than the music sort of lays over top of it. And I feel like really, particularly with this movie, Dark Knight Rises, the music I think is great within the movie and outside of the movie, it doesn't really stand alone. Whereas all of those famous John Williams themes are just enjoyable to listen to apart from the movie.
Yeah.
And just even, you know, apart from the character. And I just sort of like, it's sort of this change in scores, like how they work now compared to then, or, you know, how the best scores work now is that we see them as integrated into the movies now. And I think that's better. I think that's better for the film in that. And I think this sort of ties into my trilogy thing. It's that we're not just overlaying these external things in that we want to fit, you know, like we're just trying to cram all these things in. It's all sort of like internal. It's all kept internal with the world. And I don't know, like all the ideas in this movie, even the ones that don't totally come together, it's all still internal and all makes sense in this world, you know? And it's just sort of when trilogies have gotten kind of out of hand in the past, it's been sort of like they're adding in things that just don't make sense with the other two movies or feel totally, totally different. But there's still some things that feel the same. And it's just this, like, you know, it doesn't mesh together. Whereas this one, at least, it's all sort of interior and does mesh together. And that's why it's a good trilogy over like a bad trilogy. Not to say, you know, every trilogy John Williams has been attached to is terrible.
No.
Although one of them is, I assume he did the new Star Wars music, but
I think he did.
Yeah. But the Phantom Menace, that fight scene, that it's got awesome music. Anyways,
Duel of the Fates.
Pardon?
The Duel of the Fates.
Is that what that's called?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I just know it as the song. So.
No, that was, that might be its subtitle.
Oh, okay.
Like, parenthetically, I think it's, but it's totally Duel of the Fates.
Okay.
No, I think you're right. And we talked about it with Inception. I know I've used the phrase probably too much that it annoys people. But yeah, when you have a complete vision and like everything about that movie, you know, reflects the themes of that movie, it's so much better. And yeah, even if Hans Zimmer's songs on their, like, as a standalone pieces of music aren't, as good as an individual John Williams song, as a part of the movie, it's so much more effective.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's integral to the script and the themes and, you know, everything else in the movie. And yeah, as part of a whole, it, you know, it's more than the sum of its parts when you put it all together like that, when you have great pieces that all fit in really well together.
Yeah. And I feel like, taken on their own merits, I feel like the Danny Elfman Batman theme from like the Tim Burton movies and forward until the Nolan movie started, I feel like that on its own as a piece of music is better than the Batman theme that Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard did. But I love the Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard Batman theme more because it just ties in with movies I like better and ties in extremely well. Like, I mean, we've seen some definite evolution of the music over the course of the movie. Like, even just Hans Zimmer's adoption of more electronic Orphans. Music.
Oh, no, never mind.
Of what?
Orphans.
He's got the magic orphan eye as well. That was inspired by Hans Zimmer. I'm Hans Zimmer, and I can always tell when someone's an orphan, or the orphan rage, or whatever that lives inside us. Anyways, and like even just today when I was like making chicken sandwiches and listening to the Batman theme, just you know, in preparation for this podcast, I was just getting really excited. I was like, I am going to demolish these chicken sandwiches, you know. Like, and it just is so good. And I feel like a scene in The Dark Knight Rises that really sums up what I'm talking about is the scene when Batman returns for the first time after the stock market the stock exchange robbery that Bane and them pull off in the afternoon and then do the getaway at night. As he's coming back and Batman's making the lights and cars turn off. By the way, awesome.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that move.
The way the music sort of like cuts in and out there is so amazing. And if you listen to the score for The Dark Knight Rises, like apart from the movie, you can totally like, you know, oh, that's when the lights are going out.
Nice.
And I think that's cool.
That sums up everything we were just talking about.
Exactly.
That make for a better standalone song, but having seen the movie, that just adds enjoyment to it.
Exactly. Right? And it makes the scene so much better. And yeah. And I think that's sort of the way things are going or have been, and hopefully they continue that, you know, it's all about an internal world more than putting things over something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cookie cutter stuff.
Yeah. So, do you have anything else to say?
No, just like, I guess when people get older, like, are they still considered orphans? Like, if your parents die when you're 50, does Joseph Gordon-Levitt notice that? Or, yeah.
I don't know. We'll hit him up on Twitter and see if he'll come on and let us know. We've said a lot of bad things about a movie I definitely like. Like, you would say you like this movie, yes?
Yeah.
And you will watch it probably 5 more times.
Yes, probably. Yeah.
At some point, you will have seen this movie 5 times. So let's just list things that we liked about it. Because there was a lot I liked about this movie, and I feel like I've been very mean to it.
Okay.
I feel guilty.
Batman using Batman voice when no one else is around to talk. Big fan of that. The ongoing thing of Batman wondering where things are. Where's the trigger? Like, remember how I said people love hearing Liam Neeson tell things honestly, even though they're really bad?
Yeah.
People love hearing Christian Bale's Batman wonder where things are. Where'd I put my keys?
Where'd I leave the bat? Lucius needs the autopilot or EMP thing, EMT, whatever.
Learning someone else is alive by the fact that they've developed a software patch. I enjoy that.
Yeah, no, that was awesome.
Yep. What'd you like?
How much G shit there is in this movie? Like, just...
Define, please.
Batman is a total G like 8 separate times in this movie. Specifically when he's told he can't go heli-skiing by the doctor. Like, I like that scene when they're breaking down his injuries. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, I can't go heli-skiing. And then he like pulls out his cane and just sort of like rappels down to Commissioner Gordon. It's just like, ow! That is awesome! Like we talked about the lights, like Batman... part where he comes back is just amazing. As those lights go off, you know exactly what's happening because they've set it up well enough with him turning off the cameras. Another thing that's amazing.
Yep.
When Bruce Wayne shows up to that gala, it's just like, nope, cameras are dead.
Just one of the benefits of being super rich and super techy and awesome.
So awesome. And
yeah, like, but those are those moments that, like, even for all the ass kicking that we see Batman do, and that makes us want to be him, when you see shit like that, you're just like, oh, it never stops with you. Your life is always awesome.
Yeah, no, and the thing with the lights is cooler because we understand what's happening because it's been set up well.
Yeah.
And Batman saying, you're going to tell me where the trigger is and then you'll be allowed to die. I was like, oh!
Yeah, that's cool.
Love it so much.
That's so cool.
Oh, and the final thing is him using the missiles against the Tumbler. Like, the Tumbler's missiles against it.
Oh, yeah.
When he flies around, he's just like, well, I'm going to get rid of these five and then use the last one on you. Suck it.
Yeah.
Just great stuff.
Yeah, and I'm not nuts about the fight on the stairs between Bane and Batman, but just walking up to that fight.
Yeah.
With all the shit going on around you.
Yeah.
Bane knocks a few people just for kicks. Yeah. And gets into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just picturing Bane holding his fucking suspender.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful visual.
Using his weird voice.
We're crashing this blur. It's Kristen Wiig. Bane will be played by Don Pardo, a.k.a. the announcer from SNL.
Yeah, this is like the people have been clamoring for.
All right, well, I think it's time to bring Travis in, so let's do that. Bye, James.
Bye, Alex. Say hi to Travis for me.
So welcome to the podcast, Travis.
Hi.
Splendidly. And yourself?
Good. A little weird to be living in a post-Christopher Nolan Batman world.
I know, everything's different now.
I know. Things have changed.
Forever. So how did you feel about the Dark Knight Rises?
Still processing. There was a lot going on, but overall, I think I got what I wanted out of it. I think it defied a few expectations. It didn't live up to a few others, but it gave me the type of closure I was looking for.
Okay, what did it defy and what did it not fulfill you? Or what parts didn't fulfill you, I suppose?
We talked a lot leading up to this, and there were a couple plot points that I had predicted that I wanted to be proven wrong, and I wanted the end answer to be more interesting. Okay. But yeah, we talked about this. The last half hour or so was pretty much you could tell what was going to happen. It was good, and I was happy about it. But I almost wish I had been proved wrong by something more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of that is that they wanted to make sure to get good closure. You know, like the ending of The Dark Knight. I mean, it's the same thing that you have with a lot of second acts, I suppose. You don't have to. It's harder to know where it's going because it can go anywhere because they don't actually have to wrap it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Return of the Jedi, and I think that maybe says enough about my perspective on it that I like that it was an appropriate conclusion to that set of films. There were more callbacks to the first one than I was expecting, which was cool. I'm interested to see it I'm going to see it with my girlfriend and my dad on Saturday, I think, and I'm interested to hear what they think of the plot, especially kind of Bane's story, how it got a little convoluted at the end, like I followed, but I want to know if other people did as easily. Some of the shots were better. Some of the shots were worse. The fight, that first fight with Bane, he didn't cut away. You could actually see how Batman moved, which was sort of impressive. Yeah. And I think it kind of, like you had said, underscored the point of him using shadows and using deception and trickery, and how that didn't really work in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else? I still haven't seen it in IMAX. I don't know how it looks there. I think I was happy to be proven right about the Talia al Ghul thing, but I almost wish there had been more build-up of her character. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of a stock plot in the comics that, like, oh, a childhood friend of Bruce Wayne's comes back at the time that all this stuff is going on, blah, blah, blah. Oh, guess who's the bad guy? I'm trying to think. Hush was one. Court of the Owls recently. A couple other ones. But yeah, basically, someone shows up, you don't know anything about them. Conveniently, no one asks any questions. And then it turns out that they're the bad guy, and you're like, oh, really? Totally had me there.
Okay, keeping with the comics thing, what specific comics sort of could you see in this movie? Like, specific Batman storylines?
It was a lot. There was a lot more of Nightfall than I was expecting, which is sort of the 90s. It's the first appearance, first sort of major storyline for Bane, who was created to be sort of an evil Doc Savage, like sort of a pulp hero, which is, I think, sort of why he has the Luchador mask. Somebody that builds himself up from nothing and is just, like, unstoppable. He gradually plans Batman's downfall by releasing all of these inmates, which actually happens in the movie, and the scene is very similar to how it is in the comics, which is weird because it's a 25-year-old comic. It's not a modern comic. No Man's Land, which I was surprised about. There's an earthquake in Gotham City, and it gets cut off from the rest of the United States for... Seems like that storyline went on for years. I haven't read the whole thing, but so because they're re-releasing it, it went out of print a couple of years ago, and now they're re-releasing it. I'm reading it, and there were a few key scenes that were taken directly from it, which surprised me.
Such as
The chalk outline, the marking thing. That's exactly from it because all the different gangs are tagging areas, and when Batman comes back, and this is the other thing, he's away for a large part of that storyline, and at the beginning of it, he comes back to the city after people think that he's left.
Oh, okay.
That Commissioner Gordon confronting that cop guy at his house about sort of giving up. A lot of the cop stuff was from No Man's Land, which was interesting. What else? Any of the demon storylines with Talia al Ghul? Which kind of weirds me out about her death because I kind of assumed there would be some sort of pregnancy reveal. She has a son in the comics, and that was sort of recently brought back. Damian Wayne is the new-ish Robin, which ends it is less terrible than it sounds. It's in those Grant Morrison comics, and he's a fantastic writer. So when she died, I don't know. I was kind of it felt a little weird.
See,
because I was expecting to be some sort of thing there because they were going in this whole direction of like legacy characters and if you become an idea and the League of Shadows doesn't really have an equivalent of that, I guess. I was kind of expecting that.
Yeah, but I think they sort of went, well, no, I mean, they didn't go out of their way, but they made it pretty clear that this was the League of Shadows endgame and that there would be no more League of Shadows after this, which doesn't entirely fall in line with Batman Begins version, but it's sort of, they need closure. They need to know, like, we need to be told at the end of the movie that Gotham is kind of safe from these people, you know?
I guess so. I'm interested to think of that on a rewatch because I was kind of not sure about that. Like, there must still be tons of them in the city at the end of it.
I think we're
like probably thousands, I'm thinking, or at least a few hundred. And that, also that city is completely fucked like forever. It might as well have blown.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like we get a bunch of shots of where the final battle, like wherever that, you know, war takes place in front of that building. You know, the giant war of fist fighting.
That was a bit of a stretch I found too. I didn't understand what the cop's plan was there.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
Other than run into bullets.
There are some shots of cops like rounding up people there. I think we're meant to see that the cops won. Like decidedly won. And
that's
are arresting
fair. That's
people.
Fair. I'll...
And we see like the second in command. We see him like Bane's second in command. We see him die definitively.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I liked it though. I think his, we talked about this on the way home. Alex and I went on a date.
There was ice cream afterwards.
It was a good rise and fall. Like I liked his sort of deconstruction and then being built back up. I don't know how I feel about him returning twice in the movie. That seemed a little weird. Like he's back, but then he's back again at the end. But then he's back a third time just before the end.
I love when a character like that returns. So
they should have called it Batman Returns.
Yeah. Batman returns and then re-returns.
it was good. The acting was good. Anne Hathaway was surprisingly great. She was exactly like the comic books, the sort of more modern comics. If you read Ed Brubaker and Darwin Cook's, think it's called Trail of the Catwoman or something like that. And a phenomenal writer and a phenomenal artist doing sort of a more pulpy take on it. Like there's a couple hard boiled detectives that show up in that show and, or in that comic. And she's exactly the personality from those books. It's perfect. Cool.
What about the Dark Knight Returns? Cause I haven't read that in a number of years, but I feel like if only for the general idea of Batman coming back,
I think mobilizing the army sort of loosely, but not really, because in the book he mobilizes like an army of punks, like gang members. The reason that he comes back isn't the same. Like Frank Miller writes a different Batman character, and I think there was more of that stuff in Frank Miller wrote Year One and Dark Knight Returns, and I think there was more of Year One in Batman Begins than there is of Dark Knight Returns in any of these movies.
Yeah, and I mean, Batman in that comic was significantly older than Christian Bale's Batman, right?
Yeah, he's like in his 60s. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there was a ton from that, to be honest.
I think, I got general idea from it, you know what I mean?
I'm just pausing because I'm trying to think of what else there was.
Broken Batman, that's a big part of Returns.
Oh, there's a series that goes into Bane's connection to Ra's al Ghul, sort of. And it's sort of it takes place after Bane has been beaten at some point, and the love story is sort of paternal love with Talia is in that. Then a trade paperback called Batman versus Bane that just came out recently. Okay.
And when Bane breaks Batman's back, is that from Nightfall or is that from a different arc?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I had a friend tell me that in the IMAX framing, like the way that it's framed in the IMAX shot is a lot closer to the book than I think it was when we saw it. But it's definitely, I didn't think they were going to do it because it's a wrestling move, which is, a little bit weird, you know.
But it's just sort of like it's sort of like a total dominance thing. I've literally lifted you above me, you know, like you're so helpless that I can hold you above my head, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it worked.
Oh,
I think
absolutely.
It was I haven't done a ton of Batman reading recently.
No worries.
But yeah, that's basically it. More Nightfall, No Man's Land, and I think the it was called Bane of the Demon.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
It was good. I'm going to see it again. I'm going to think about it a bit more, and I'm excited to hear you and Jimmy talk about it a
Sounds
little bit.
Sounds good. Thank you for joining us, and to everybody listening out there, be sure to check out our website, themcguffinmen.com. We've got plenty of other audio podcasts and video podcasts. Last week we did an audio podcast on Batman Begins and the Dark Knight, as well as a video podcast on Inception. So if you didn't get enough Christopher Nolan from The Dark Knight Rises, we have plenty on themcguffinmen.com. Also follow us on Twitter at themcguffinmen, all one word. And various other things. Find us on Pinterest. Maybe we'll have a Pinterest page by now. But thanks for listening, and check back next week.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themcguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter at @themcguffinmen.